for clarification. And so we went back and I met with Kathy Green, Martin Nelson, Legislative Council, Representative from the Department of State Lands and the Historic Preservation Division. Sat down in meetings, tried to go through these amendments, looking at technical matters in the bill for several purposes. One was, at one point we were incorporating some amendments that had come up in that and then earlier Hanegro's version that had been recommended by a number of the Indian tribes that had testified at the earlier April 7th meeting. Also, we were consolidating House Bill 2440 with House Bill 2442, which was in another committee and was amending ORS 273705, because it was referred to in this bill and was being amended, and we thought that it would be a better idea to coordinate those two and have both of them before us. Also, there were attempts made to address some of the concerns that have been raised by individuals who opposed the bill. And in addition, there were a number of technical matters that we felt needed to be cleaned up. So we've tried to do that. I can walk the committee through the Hanegro's version of the bill.
Yes, let's just take it section by section.
Okay. Excuse me, is Representative Abrams going to call?
He was here once.
Has Representative Magron been called?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Okay, section one of the bill at the beginning is some clarifying language, basically to clarify that it's the object that is to be at least 75 years old, not the indigenous or subsequent culture. Subsection two redefines archaeological site. That is a combination of portions of the original definition in the bill and a policy statement from section two of the bill. Also, the policy statement, well, that one other change in subsection five of section one, we define public lands. In the Hanegro's version that we looked at before, it was defined as any lands owned by the state of Oregon or any of its political subdivisions. And this is just set out more particularly to cover exactly what's meant by political subdivisions. Section two of the bill, the policy statement has been narrowed considerably. Originally, it said that the state shall identify, maintain, and manage for posterity archaeological sites on public lands, including submerged lands, archaeological sites significant in state, national, or international history, archaeological sites important for scientific study and public education, and also archaeological and other historically documented sites of particular importance to the ethnic, cultural, and traditional heritage of Oregon people. I think we've tried, the attempt was made to narrow that and make it a more specific reference. Section three of the bill was set forth the prohibitions. One of the problems was that it referred to ORS 273705, which was the one being amended in 2442. That section is amended in the bill, and we will get to that later. But we've done that to put all the information before us and to try to coordinate the provisions of these sections. Another problem was a concern that the bill originally would have prevented the sale of objects acquired before the act took place, took effect. The amended version provides that you can't sell archaeological objects. This is subsection 2A, subsection 2. without a certificate of origin. And this version describes exactly what's meant by a certificate of origin. In the case of archaeological objects that are acquired after the effective date of the act, then you would be required to provide a statement disclosing the location from which it was removed and that it was obtained, that the object was obtained in accordance with provisions of the act. In the case where the archaeological object was acquired before the effective date of the act, the person would just need to provide a statement saying that the object was acquired before the effective date of the act. Section 3, subsection 5, just exempts the disturbing of Indian cairn or graves because those are covered in other provisions of the statutes. Section 4, subsection 2, was a concern I had raised about the fact that it stated that each violation of section 3 was a separate distinct offense. I didn't know if they meant each object or sale to each different person of objects that were obtained in violation of the act. And the proponents of the bill were willing to eliminate that section entirely. Sections 5 to 14 all had to do with seizure and forfeiture. We tried to simplify that originally in the bill, taking that language from the fish and wildlife provisions having to do with materials that were used in violation of the commercial fishing laws and so forth. And they were sort of convoluted. There were some references that didn't apply. Anyway, we replaced those. That's all the way through section 14. And have provided for seizure, forfeiture, and so forth in sections 4 through 6 of the bill. The provisions that are included here were taken from the RICO statutes. Quickly, subsections 1 and 2 allow the seizure of archaeological objects or proceeds from their sale, also of real or personal property that was used in the course of or derived through violations of the provisions of these laws relating to archaeology, archaeological sites. Subsection 3 describes how the seizure can be made, either upon court process or without process. Subsection 4 relates to the forfeiture proceedings and what the police can do with property pending the forfeiture and final disposition. Subsection 5 allows the Attorney General, DA, or any state agency that has jurisdiction over conduct which is violated to institute civil proceedings. Subsection 6 provides that a defendant or an injured person could have a trial by jury, and it gives an injured person a right to proceeds for forfeited property that is superior to the state's. A final judgment or decree in favor of the state in any criminal proceeding under these sections would be an estoppel as to related matters in the civil action state and the defendant. Subsection 8 provides that an action under these sections could be commenced within 5 years of the conduct of violation of the act. And subsection 9 basically says that application of one civil remedy does not exclude other civil or criminal remedies under the act or other laws. Section 5 is a provision for the person to be able to provide a surety and for the court then to allow them to have their property subject to this surety bond, surety or bond pending the disposition of the curbs. And then if the property is confiscated or forfeited, the owner is to return it. And if they fail to do so, then the police officer can maintain an action for it not being returned. Section six provides that archaeological objects which are seized and forfeited would go to the State Museum of Anthropology, that proceeds that are recovered would go to the Commission on Indian Services in order to enforce the act or for archaeological preservation. I think that was in the bill, if I recall right, that was in the bill in a section that was deleted. Section seven remains what used to be section 16 is now section seven, that's not changed. Section eight, I'm on page nine of the marked up version. Provides that only, well, there were some issues raised relating to sacred objects, and as the bill originally provided that every sacred object that was found at an archaeological site, that every reasonable effort was to be made to notify the Historic Preservation Office and the appropriate ethnic group, and that the State Historic Preservation Office could authorize the group to repossess the sacred object. The amendments to that provide that opportunity for the group to repossess it just if the sacred object was found on public land. I think the issue that it had come up in terms of forcing a person to give up something found on the private land. It still provides, however, that if a person is doing an archaeological investigation on public lands or on private lands with the owner's permission, which is required in another provision of the bill, that they still would notify the Historic Preservation Office and the appropriate ethnic group or Indian group. Section nine it had been somewhat unclear the provision that a person who wanted to conduct an excavation had to notify and consult with the appropriate Indian tribe. It was somewhat unclear exactly what was expected of someone to consult with this group. We tried to make it clearer in subsection two so that the person would consult the representative of the tribe to establish a procedure for handling sacred objects. There was also permissive language in lines 16 and 17 that said if the person required assistance in locating the tribe, the person may contact the Commission on Indian Service for assistance. Since that was permissive and it didn't really seem to serve a particular function, we rephrased that in subsection 4 to require the Commission on Indian Service to assist a person in locating the tribe if they were requested to do so. Also, it allows a delegate of an Indian tribe to be present during an excavation. On page 10, the original sections 19 and 20 dealing with archaeological activities on private and federal land have been deleted. Section 10 allows the Attorney General or any person to institute civil proceedings under the provisions of the bill, allows for recovery of costs and attorney's fees, allows the Attorney General to intervene in an action. Section 11, on page 11, I think there could be a change on this one. Originally, this is the public records provisions that have to do with what public records the state archivist keeps. And this was excluding the requirement that they keep the archaeological site and object information. It didn't make a lot of sense in subsection C as written that an archaeological site itself or an object itself would be a public record. So we had amended that to say records or locations of archaeological sites or objects. That information is going to be kept by the Museum of Anthropology anyway. I think we could either eliminate subsection C or subsection D and achieve what we're trying, because now they're repetitive. Section 12, on page 12, this is another amendment to the public records law, and in this case, it describes which public records are exempt from disclosure unless there's a finding that the public interest requires disclosure. One of the, well, the subsection K at the very bottom of page 12 originally had excluded information concerning the location of archaeological sites or objects, and there was concern that the Indian tribes be able to find out where the objects or sites were, and so that exception language was added in. I had an additional concern about that, and that is that if I thought that there might be, like the Department of Transportation might have tourist information about a place that would be an archaeological site for archaeological objects, and that this might prevent them from revealing the location of sites that are well known and that the public visits on a regular basis. I don't know a lot about that. As I understand the intent of the proponents of the bill, they do want to exempt from disclosure additional archaeological sites that are discovered or that aren't already made public information. I guess it's more accurate to say ones that are discovered or found after the effective date of the act. The other exemption that I think would need to be included here is that later on you'll see that that certain persons are allowed to keep archaeological objects if they've got certain facilities and if they provide a list of the objects they've collected to the Museum of Anthropology and make them available to other people to do research and to study and look at them. I would think that it would be appropriate to include an exception under subsection K here of those materials that the Museum of Anthropology has recommended be made available for research. That would be pursuant to the section we'll be coming to, 273705. Section 13 is that is ORS 273705, which is the existing prohibition against excavating from land owned or leased by the state. The present prohibition prohibits excavation from state lands of materials of archaeological, prehistoric, or anthropological nature, or removal of excavated materials without a permit from the president of the University of Oregon. The same is applied to identified sites of historical significance on state lands. Section 13 does expand that coverage to public lands, which was defined previously. It does clarify, provides that you can't excavate or alter an archaeological site on public lands, or make an exploratory excavation, or systematically remove from public lands materials of this nature without obtaining a permit in here issued by the Division of State. One of the reasons for putting in the systematic and remove from public lands was a concern raised with people who might, they were trying to distinguish between those who were doing a determined sort of archaeological expedition versus somebody who stumbles over the trailhead. Or finds something in passing and isn't digging for it. It provides that materials. Subsection two, well. Okay, subsection 1B would provide that a person who obtains a permit who wanted to keep an archaeological object must submit evidence that that person has, that there are approved curatorial facilities for keeping that object. Right now, the provisions, I think, say that you could get the permit if you agree to, I think it's turn over half of the, yes, a permit would be granted on a condition that not less than one half in number and value of all specimens would remain the property of the state of Oregon unless there was an agreement to accept less. This would say that everything that is excavated under these provisions would become the property of the state. Except that it could be kept at another approved curatorial site, curatorial facility. The permit has to have the approval of the state agency or the local governing body that's managing the lands. That's in subsection C. Subsection D leaves it to the Division of State Lands, consulting with the State Historic Preservation Office and the Commission on Indian Services to adopt rules governing the issuance of the permits. Subsection 2 establishes the circumstances under which a permit may be granted. And the first subsection says that it may be to a person conducting an excavation if it's undertaken for the benefit of a recognized scientific or educational institution to promote the knowledge of archaeology and anthropology. Second circumstance is to a qualified archaeologist sponsored by a recognized institution, private firm, or Indian tribe. Subsection 3 provides that the materials recovered by a person who gets this permit remain the property of the state of Oregon unless the Museum of Anthropology approves an alternative curatorial facility and the materials would be made available for research by scholars as recommended by the director of the museum, and that the material is retained by a recognized scientific or educational institution that received the permit. Subsection 3 alternatives. Either that the material is retained by a recognized scientific or educational institution that got a permit, the state board of it, higher ed granted approval for it to be curated elsewhere, or the sponsoring institution, firm, or Indian tribe furnished a catalog of the materials to the Museum of Anthropology. The subsection 4 is a definition section that defines those groups that can have a person excavate for materials. There's another issue here where it says a private firm is any legal entity that has as a member of its staff a qualified archaeologist. The proponents do not mean to restrict it to somebody who's got to have somebody on permanent staff. They are willing and intended to accommodate what frequently happens, and that is that someone is a consultant working as on a consultant basis for a firm. Qualified archaeologists is defined in subsection B. And finally, section 14, just adds in the violation of section 3, which is the prohibition section, it's also a class B misdemeanor, as is the existing violation of 27375. If the committee wants, I can point out the specific concerns that were raised by people about this bill and note the way specifically that they've tried to address them.
Well, it's representing the ground standard. Sorry, I know you've been talking, burning up, huh? President, you write it up here, just a minute, I guess. President Agard's going crazy here, I want to talk to us.
No, I'll just make a few comments, I appreciate your indulgence. I have not seen the draft that you've been referring to. I have an earlier one, and portions of it are there, and there's a lot of new stuff. I guess that I'd like to convey to you, if I may, some of the thoughts that come from a number of my constituents who have an interest in the subject. I have received a number of letters, I don't know, 15, 20 letters from people who are objecting to this bill and the companion bills. Generally, these are people who, over the years, have had a hobby of collecting arrowheads, usually. Some very casually, others perhaps in a more systematic fashion, which I would agree is objectionable. What they find in the bill is that this is not a historic preservation bill, but they regard it rather as, to be perfectly candid with the committee, an archaeologist turf bill. It puts everything, the control of all of these things, in the hands of the archaeologists, and whatever a qualified archaeologist is, and I'm not sure that that's closely defined. There appears to be, in this field, peoples with varying levels of expertise, some of whom are affiliated with the Museum of Anthropology and are cloaked with all of the majesty of that office. Others are somewhat informed amateurs who have striven very hard over the years to develop collections. I'm told that the various county museums, state museums, others, private museums that have materials on exhibit have all been furnished by such people who have contributed greatly toward the knowledge of past cultures and have provided specimens and so forth. All this would now become illegal. I'm told that all this stuff to be lodged only in the Museum of Anthropology is not even on exhibit to the public. And so there are those who say that the activities that we have conducted all these years have been, in fact, to the public benefit, and now they are to become illegal. I'm told by proponents that this is not intended to make a criminal of a person who picks up an arrowhead. And yet, I don't know whether they've been changed in your latest version or not, but in former Section 3, it simply said that no person shall appropriate. Appropriate, I think, means to acquire. Appropriate, excavate, injure, destroy, or alter. Nobody wants to excavate. Nobody wants to injure, destroy, or alter archaeological sites or objects. But appropriate, it seems to me, if a person happens to find an arrowhead on the ground and picks it up, that is an appropriation. And I believe that language is still in there. There are, of course, people who have these artifacts as a hobby and have had for many, many years. And they trade with one another and have collections like stamp collections or coin collections. Where do you draw the line between what is, an archaeological incursion and what is has been a traditional, historically harmless hobby? that people have engaged in. And suddenly, I have a bunch of constituents who now perceive that there, these Hitlerian tactics in this bill relative to confiscations and all of these penalties and oh my God, it suddenly becomes a great horrible thing to pick up an arrowhead. I don't think that the folks who are my constituents are wanting to do more than continue to pursue what they consider to be a harmless hobby and not be a criminal thereby. And then secondly, there are those who have written books, have contributed to historic knowledge, who are not in that category of the qualified archaeologist who suddenly see themselves and what they consider to be years of good activity and leading to public education suddenly declared illegal and taken away from their capabilities. And I guess that's, those approaches are the ones that my folks find objectionable. If I can be of any further assistance to you, I would like to be. I find the whole matter one of those things that I wish would go away, but it's here and we have to face up to it.
Questions or comments for Representative Ingrams?
Bernie, I think we did try to get copies of this Handy Gross version to...